Good morning and welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. I'm Jeff Snyder, and this is BRN Weekly for Saturday, November 28th, 2020. And our top story this week, advanced estate planning tips. Joining me now to discuss this and more is Julie Hall, better known as the Estate Lady. Julie, welcome back to the program. Great to see you this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
So about a week ago, we sat down with a funeral home and talked about advanced planning and what people need to think about so they're not rushing around at the last minute to plan a funeral for a loved one, which is arguably a very difficult time. And I immediately thought of you because when we had talked in June, July about your new book and things to unclutter the process for estate planning, I wanted to reach out and ask you what your thoughts were around making the estate planning process easier. So what can you tell us here, Joel?
Well, I think it's very interesting that, you know, people spend a lifetime collecting their things, their possessions, inheriting them, displaying them, talking about them, but rarely do they make a plan for them. And that can be a huge burden that you're putting on your heirs, your children, your grandchildren, whoever your legal executor or executrix might be. So there are things people should do in advance. For example, hire a personal property appraiser just to come in and do a walkthrough. It shouldn't take any longer than a couple of hours to at least identify what has value versus what doesn't. Because a lot of my clients think that if they inherited it, it has a lot of value, and that's not necessarily the case. So first understand what you have, because if you don't, someone else will. And it's very important that you have the power and you have the knowledge. Secondly, talk to your children if you have children, or talk to your beneficiaries. Ask them what they want and create a wish list. Not only create that wish list of what Bob wants or Ralph wants or Lisa wants, but assign a fair market value that the appraiser can help you assign. And not only are you keeping track of what they want, you're also hopefully keeping it as equitable as possible, which in the long run will minimize contention down the road. So those are a couple of really big tips that I feel are very important for people to follow. I don't consider myself to be old, but I am a widow. And I did have that frank discussion with my adult daughter, what she would like in this house. And much to my non-surprise, I should say, she didn't want much, because that generation just doesn't. So I listened, and she gave me permission to let go of the things that I wanted to let go of, keep what was important to me, keep what was important to her, and now we both have peace of mind.
Really, really smart. And I remember in our conversation during the summer about the contention and how this can really break up families and create a fissure that can just expand, and really damage relationships. And that's the last thing you want. Julie, when it comes to the planning, though, is there a rule of thumb in terms of the age? Is it when you get into your 50s, 60s, 70s that you should be thinking about this? Should I be thinking about it I'm in my late 40s and think I don't have a lot of things, but are there things that I should be thinking about now?
I can only speak for myself and the experience of 30 years of watching things go terribly wrong. I think the second you get married, you need to have a plan. And, you know, once you join a relationship with that loved one, you need to make a plan for what you have. In the unlikely event something could happen when they're young, people at least have some direction. But I think as people approach their middle age, it's very important to have that plan in place. It's important to give other people the information of what you want. Again, the power is yours. You know, what is it that you want? What are your decisions? What do you want to have happen should something happen to you? And it's very important to choose someone wisely that will honor your wishes, but it's most important to have the legal documents to back that up. Because if you don't go the distance and don't have the legal documents, things can go really wrong.
And that's where you get into things like, Julie, like probate. If you don't have any executor, you don't have any decisions that are made, then it goes to the state, if I'm not mistaken, or the local jurisdiction. How does that work?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and that would be a great question for a lawyer. However, every state has different laws. If somebody dies intestate, as in without a will, it is my understanding that it can be a long, drawn-out process. They have to make sure the debt is covered first, and a lot of things are put on hold, making it very nerve-wracking for those left behind.
Yeah, absolutely, and that legal framework, very important. I guess the last question, Julie, is making sure, you know, when we're talking with Eliza Feller of the Saul Levinson Brother Funeral Home, we talked about having a folder, and in that folder are things like your wishes for the funeral process, what type of coffin do you want, you know, what your Social Security information is, financial information. Is it, you know, your belief that in this folder, or at least nearby, maybe in a separate folder, are things like the will, are things like the estate plan, so that your children or your heirs can go there and figure out exactly what your wishes were?
You bet. Excellent question. Yes. Either have individual folders close together, or I can tell you my parents put together a binder with not only all of their wishes, but all of their financial information, all of their funeral information. They pre-planned their funeral. They paid for everything, and all we had to buy were the flowers, because my mom said she didn't want us children to go through any more than we already had to. And I just thought that was the most loving thing a parent could do. So yes, have all of these documents close together in the event of an emergency or a really scary phone call that many of us have received. You just grab those folders or that binder and you go. And it's really nice to have all of that in your hand.
Last question. I know I said it was the last question, but I thought of one that I really wanted to ask. Given the pandemic, and we've all been through lockdowns, how has the estate planning business changed, or has it changed in the short period of time that we've been under these measures to prevent us from, you know, be socially distant and wearing masks, et cetera? Have you seen a change? Are you doing things more electronically, for example, instead of being on site at a home or with a family?
Yes, yes, on all accounts. I think lawyers are a little busier creating some wills. I am hearing some buzz about that. From my own perspective, I think the virus has acted as a catalyst for people to downsize and create a simpler life for themselves by moving out of the four-bedroom home and choosing a two-bedroom, you know, condo or townhouse. I am seeing a very strong trend for that. And as for myself, yes, I'm doing a tremendous amount virtually and helping people with consultations, or if they need online valuations, they just send me some clear pictures and I do my best to help them from afar.
Yeah, well, as we said, the pandemic is impacting so many aspects of society, so many, you know, parts of our life. It just makes sense that it would impact the estate planning business as well. Julie, always a pleasure chatting with you. Have a great rest of the weekend, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Thank you so much.
Well, thanks, Julie. Great to see you. Thanks for sharing your perspective. And when we come back, a look at some of our best segments of the week. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN Weekly. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings in retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Hi folks, Joe Namath here, and if you're on Medicare, this is important. You're now entitled to eliminate copays and get dental care, dentures, eyeglasses, prescription coverage, in-home aids, unlimited transportation, and home-delivered meals, all at no additional cost. Plus, your zip code may have coverage with the Give Back benefit that adds money back to your Social Security check every month. Look, with the uncertainty of the virus and vaccines, you need to get everything you're entitled to. Here's the bottom line. Call to get significant benefits at no additional cost and see if your zip code has coverage with the Give Back benefit. Millions of people have trusted the Medicare Coverage Helpline. You can too. Call now. It's free.
Call 1-800-924-3920. That's 1-800-924-3920.
Welcome back. On Monday, I spoke with the FDIC's Karen Chu about how America banks. Let's take a look.
Well, so we have great news, which is that in 2019, which is when the survey was conducted, a record 95% of U.S. households were banked, meaning that they had a bank account or a credit union account. This is the highest percentage and number of households that are banked since we began conducting the survey in 2009. About half of the increase in the number of banked households since 2017 was really due to improvements in the socioeconomic circumstances of U.S. households, in particular, improvements in their annual income, improvements in the volatility of that income, improvements in their educational level, employment status, and home ownership status. In 2019, 5.4% of U.S. households were unbanked, and that translates into about 7.1 million households. We asked these unbanked households the reason that they're unbanked. About 29% of unbanked households said that they did not have enough money to meet minimum balance requirements, and that was the main reason, the primary reason that they were unbanked. The second most commonly given primary reason for being unbanked was that actually that the household didn't trust banks. And that primary reason was given by about 16% of unbanked households. There are many reasons that people may say that they don't trust banks. In some qualitative work, focus groups that we have done, we've certainly heard from households that have immigrated from other countries where, you know, the banking system may have collapsed. And there are also households people who didn't grow up in a household that used a bank. And so there's just a lack of familiarity with mm-hmm. banks, which then could translate into not trusting banks. So there's a whole variety of different reasons that really underlie that response. In fact, the FDIC has a financial education program called Money Smart that really engages with consumers of all ages, including we have a Money Smart for young people. We have Money Smart for older adults. and we have Money Smart for adults. And that really is a program that can help enhance financial skills of the participants and also help, create positive banking relationships and help educate people about the banking system.
And I also spoke with 7Investing's Dan Klein about how you can protect your data and your money from cyber thieves. Let's take a look.
You have to be careful. And being careful isn't just wearing a mask. Being careful isn't just all the health precautions you have to take. There's also a lot of precautions you need to take with your money. And some of them are really basic, like don't enter your credit card information on a website you've never heard of. If it's something really small and you think it's credible, maybe go out and get, or order on Amazon a prepaid Visa card and use that to pay. I know that sounds like an extra step, or at least do your homework. Find, is this a real site? Is this something I can trust? I tend to confine my business to the big sites, to Amazon, to eBay, Dick's Sporting Goods, companies you know are real companies. The other thing you want to be really wary of is, let's say you get an email. I know that if I use an old credit card that's out of date to pay for something on Amazon, Amazon sends you an email saying, hey, can you update your payment information? This one didn't go through. You want to be really careful that that's actually from Amazon. You want to check the send address, and you probably don't want to follow the email. You probably want to go to Amazon.com, log into your orders, find that order. There are a lot of really clever scams out there. Same thing with any email from your bank. Don't go through the email. Go to the bank's website. Anything that's wrong will be there. And if you have to, pick up the phone and ask the question. You want to be very, very skeptical. You also want to be very protective of your data. It is really easy to think you're on Amazon and you're actually on Slamazon or some other, spoofed site, and all of a sudden you've given your credit card info. The other thing you really want to do, and this is very important, is you should this time of year be regularly checking your credit card bills, your debit card, whatever it is you use to pay for things. I know that just once or twice a week, because I go in and I pay my credit cards as I use them, I'll just look and I'll go, hey, what's that $60 charge? And sometimes you look and you don't recognize the name and it's someone you've done business with, but their business name isn't what you think it is, and that's fine. But it's always a smart idea to check, because every now and then, look, you're at a restaurant and you put a $13 tip and they put it in as a $130 tip. That can happen, especially for those of us with really bad handwriting. So you want to be really, really careful and really, really vigilant. And legitimate companies never ask for your password, credit card information, social security number, whatever it is, via an email. It's always, they might send you an email alerting you to the problem, and then they're going to bring you to their site. So if you don't click that link and you instead just go to the site, you'll find out very, very quickly whether it's real or not. And you want to be skeptical. If you know you've had 100 orders in a row with Amazon with no problems, why would there be an issue with this one? You want to take that healthy dose of skepticism. And so let's say in a very safe way, you're buying locally. Maybe you're going, we have distance, holiday craft fairs here. And it's probably not something I would do this year, but let's pretend you're going to go do that. Pay at the person that has a Square reader, not the person who's, writing down your credit card number. You want to be really, really careful. It's very, very simple for any merchant to set up Square. It's a $25 process. So if they don't do that, you should be skeptical of not necessarily their motives, but their ability to protect your information. They're probably not going to go, you buy your little Christmas tree ornament. They're not going to steal your credit card, but they might be lazy about how they store your credit card, making it possible for someone else. I am generally not a particularly wary person. I tend to be trusting, but you don't want to make it easy. And certainly, if you didn't play the lottery, you didn't win the lottery. Nobody needs your bank account information to give you money. If you get a gift card from someone who doesn't normally give you a gift, you don't have to ever put in your information to redeem a gift card. And it's okay if it looks like, your friend sent you a Starbucks gift card. You can call them up and be like, hey, just wanted to be sure. It says I got a Starbucks gift card from you. And they go, I didn't send you a Starbucks gift card. Well, that's probably a scam. So you want to be really careful. And again, there are some bad actors out there, and most of it is just common sense. I know that I make all of my online purchases with one credit card. It is easier to track that way, with the exception of Amazon, because Amazon is tied to my Amazon credit card, and the only thing I use that for is Amazon. So it is really easy to go, okay, did I buy these things? And are these charges correct? You want to check often and trust but verify. you want to be very vigilant with your Social Security number. Your Social Security number unlocks all sorts of doors in terms of people being able to steal your accounts. I know we've talked about this before. We had our Netflix account stolen. And we could still get in, but someone else was using it. And we noticed because our preferences, like the shows we liked, started changing to shows we weren't watching. And then I went, to change my password and realized I was no longer the owner of my account. So what was someone doing? They were stealing $14.99 a month from Netflix. Wasn't that big a deal. But it was pretty easy to fix because I had all my personal information. All that person had done had figured out my password and used it to go in and change some stuff. They didn't have my Social Security number. They didn't have the things you could use to sort of go to a company and prove you're you. That's not always easy. So your Social Security number, you should guard as if it's cash. The procedure to get into the Apple App Store is pretty vigilant. It's also fairly expensive. You have to have an Apple Developers account, which is not, it's not free.
It's $100. It's $100.
And so that's a bit of a bar, but they are looking and scrutinizing everything in your app. So it is very difficult. I'm not saying there's never been something scammy. Obviously, there must be. But for the most part, the other thing you want to do is wherever you're downloading something, look at reviews. Look and see if other people like it. And if they generally don't, or they say, oh, hey, this free app is really just an ad for a paid app. Like in the App Store, they tell you in the iTunes Store, in the Apple Store, they tell you, okay, this app has in-app charges, or you can only use basic functionality. It's not that hard to figure out. So it's one, yeah, you want to be vigilant. But for the most part, if you're going through Google Play, if you're going through the Apple App Store, you're probably okay.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN Weekly. Have a topic of interest or someone you think we should talk to, drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the news in retirement, markets, technology, personal finance, so much more, check out our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Don't forget, we're back again tomorrow, where members of the media, academia, and financial services all come together to analyze all the news in retirement, markets, technology, so much more this week. It's BRN Sunday. You're not going to miss it. We've got a great special post-Thanksgiving show. So until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.
Are you being audited and do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Is the IRS threatening to take more of your money? Don't fight the IRS alone. The Tax Doctor is here to help you negotiate your tax bill and reduce your stress. The IRS can freeze your assets and seize your bank accounts, but you can stop these IRS actions. The Tax Doctor will work with you using our years of experience to represent your case to help you get the best resolution under the IRS guidelines. Help is here to deal with the IRS to reduce your stress. We've handled thousands of cases, so we know what we're doing. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, do not call the IRS alone. Call a Tax Doctor now for a tax emergency analysis.
Call 800-224-6439.